For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Is your brain lying to you? So today our topic is your brain lying to you? Christina Fonseca has a quote, "Your brain is a liar. It makes assumptions not rooted in fact, draws conclusions that are more about fear than any kind of logical argument, and has insights often manipulated by the media and other compelling stories." When you think about it, your thoughts are really just images and sound bites. They're not necessarily reality. Sometimes they feel like they're true, even when they're not. We're not aware of most of the 50 to 80,000 thoughts we have each day. That's 2,000 to 3,000 thoughts per hour. So we practice mindfulness so we can become more aware of these thoughts. Because if we're aware of our thoughts, we can choose whether or not we want to believe the thought and whether or not we want that thought to influence our words and our actions. So meditating slows us down so that we're aware that we have thoughts. We find that most of the thoughts we have are reruns, rehashing the past or stirring up anxiety about the future. But until we're aware of our thoughts, we can't do anything with them. But they sure do a heck of a lot with us, unfortunately. So if we look closely, we find that many of our thoughts are figments of our imagination. They're stories that we made up. They might be replays of monologues of our parents or other influential people in our lives. Some thoughts come from our inner critic, who's so worried that we'll fail that it's constantly trying to fix us, even when we're not broken. Many of our thoughts were helpful at some time in the past, that's why they repeat, but they can continue even though they're no longer helpful at all. Right now, your eyes and ears are telling a biased story to your brain, which then tells another biased story. And each step along the way in this game of telephone gets you a little further away from reality. So when we say we saw something, it's not necessarily exactly what we saw, it's what we perceived, because we have our biases in how we see things. Rick Hansen suggests that we recognize the lies built into the conventional strategy for happiness to wake up from their spells. Mother Nature whispers, you should feel threatened, frustrated, lonely. Culture and commerce say, you need more clothes, thinner thighs, better beer, consume more and be like the pretty people on TV. The residues of past experiences, especially young ones, mutter in the background, you're not that smart, attractive, worthy. You need to do more and be more. If you just have X, you'll get what the life you want. The essentializing nature of cognition implies crave more, cling more. It will work the next time, really. Think about that. How many times something you've done hasn't worked and you do it again because you think that next time it's going to work? That's your brain lying to you. How often have you told yourself, if I just get this, I'll be happy? And when you get this, what happens? You need that. And then you'll be happy. And then you need the other thing. And on and on and on. Or we see the chocolate and we say, I'm feeling down, I'm going to eat this chocolate, it's going to make me feel better. So we gorge ourselves on chocolate, and maybe it tastes good, but maybe we're so urgently eating it that we don't even taste it. And then afterwards, we start beating ourselves up for indulging, and then we look at the scale and beat ourselves up even more. So our brain lies to us. It tells us these short-term pleasures are really what we want, when in some cases, it's not self-care that's all us short-term pleasure. It's really doing some damage to us or making us uncomfortable. So habits, though, are not the only thing our brain lies to us about. If you're mindful, you can notice a discrepancy between the rewards from your habits and the reward or discomfort that you actually got. Our brain creates a reward value based on the information from the past, but it doesn't always update that reward value. Thus, your brain tells you that you're going to get rewards that no longer exist. And it doesn't tell you about the new discomforts that you're going to encounter. So you continue with a habit that doesn't serve you. I had a Diet Pepsi habit, and I thought it made me feel relaxed and connected, made me feel good. And that reward value came from when I was maybe 10 years old, and I got to stay up with the big kids like my sister Trisha and Susan. And have POP. But that reward was true when I was 10 years old. However, 40 years later, that reward doesn't exist. But I couldn't give up my Diet Pepsi habit no matter how hard I tried. Judson Brewer says we need to give our brains new information to establish that the value they had learned in the past is now outdated. By paying attention to the results of behavior in the present moment, you can jolt your brain out of habit autopilot and see and feel exactly how rewarding or unrewarding the habit is for you right now. This new information resets the reward value on the old habit and moves better behaviors up in the hierarchy of reward value and eventually into automatic mode. So after reading Judson Brewer's book, The Craving Mind, I decided to test out his theory. He said awareness would allow me to get up-to-date and accurate information so I could trust the new data coming in rather than dismissing it as erroneous, which we often do. Again, another quote from Judson Brewer. You can probably see the irony here. Old habitual behaviors are based on outdated data. Yet because they're old, they're familiar. And because they're familiar, we trust them. Change is scary. So each day I allowed myself to drink a Diet Pepsi, and I paid really close attention from the urge to have a Diet Pepsi until a few hours after I finished the bottle. At first I thought, this is never going to work. The first sips tasted so good. But I continued being mindful about my rewards and my discomforts. This went on day after day until one day I realized after drinking a half a bottle, I had no desire for the rest. It didn't really taste all that great. I continued drinking it, being mindful of the rewards and discomforts. And after a month or so, I noticed that even the first few sips didn't taste all that good. And I realized I wasn't relaxed after drinking a Diet Pepsi. I was too worried about whether I'd have to go to the bathroom during a meeting at work. And I was not connecting with my coworkers because I was rushing out of meetings to go to the bathroom. My brain was finally resetting the reward value of Diet Pepsi, and slowly I quit drinking it. And now I have no desire for a Diet Pepsi at all. Judson Brewer says, no matter what you name it, if you want to change it, you have to rub your brain's little orbital frontal cortex nose in its own poop so that it can clearly smell how stinky it is. That's how your brain learns. So if you want to change a habit, trying grit is not going to work because your brain will keep lying to you and say you need to do this. It's learning and being mindful and seeing what actually the rewards or unrewards that habit brings. But habits aren't the only thing our brain lies to us about. They also tell us how difficult it's going to be for us to do things that are good for us. How difficult it's going to be for you to sit down and meditate because you have to do 15 minutes, not just 2 minutes. Our brains overestimate the work, the discomfort, and the pain, maybe of a new exercise habit, and they underestimate the benefits. Think about how often you've reneged on New Year's resolutions. I bet there's not a person in this room or on Zoom who hasn't reneged on a New Year's resolution. In the Maria Schreiber email last Sunday, she put a quote in from her friend Tom, and he's talking about achieving things. And this was through artificial intelligence, but the quote goes on to say, is it something that helps people achieve love? Can it spread the effects of love? If not, then it's just the result of a restless mind of humanity, which, when it confronts the deepest riddles and challenges of life, gives up and, lying to itself about the significance of its quest, takes refuge in clever puzzles and cute stunts that do nothing to ease suffering or spread love, but instead give restless, addictive mind a buzz, which tricks us into thinking we're on the right path. How many times have you been tricked to thinking you're on the right path because you're working so hard and you're so busy? We also lie to ourselves to minimize or avoid conflict. How many times have you been asked to do a favor that you really didn't want to do and you're feeling resentful about it, but you lie to yourself and you say, oh, it's not that big a deal, I can do it, or I'll figure it out, or if I don't do it, they won't like me anymore. And Terry Cole says the excuses or outright lies we tell ourselves are how we rationalize our own behavior or the behavior of others to avoid establishing boundaries. It's also a form of resistance to justify not having a difficult conversation or calling out bullshit. That one really resonated with me. How many times do you lie to yourself because you don't want conflict? Another way is that we sometimes create personas, the person that we think people want us to be. And this requires creating a mask and keeping that mask in place and telling ourselves the lies so we can keep that mask in place. And I can attest that over time, keeping the mask in place is exhausting. One of the masks I created and carried through much of my life was to be a do-it-all and a know-it-all. My inner critic told me I had to do this so people would like me. Wrong. When you're a know-it-all and a do-it-all, you're so busy doing, you don't have time to create relationships. And you make people feel useless and stupid, so they don't necessarily like you. So to replace that lie, I used a mantra for about 2 years, and I had quit it maybe 3-4 months ago, but it came up in my head again this morning. I am worthy, I am enough, my needs matter. And I need to keep telling myself that. I don't need to be something different. I am worthy, I'm enough just as who I am, and my needs matter. And so a couple of the questions I ask myself when my brain starts lying to me that you got to get this done is, what's more important, getting this done or being present for this person? Cleaning the house or taking care of my grandsons? Which is more important? I also ask a lot, what's more important, being right or this relationship? And I found that asking that question, I'm not lying to myself saying I have to prove I'm right so that he thinks I'm a smart person. It's, I don't have to prove being right. And I think he likes me better when I don't always correct him or her, whoever it would be. We also tell ourselves lies because we think we have to stay safe. My inner critic told me to hold friends at arm's length. If I let them know the real me, they'd reject me. This is based on something that happened when I was in seventh grade in 1968, when my best friend told me I didn't fit in with the group anymore, just as I was coming out of my shell. So for 50 years, I was telling myself that lie. And the truth is, when you keep people at arm's length, you don't develop close friendships, you don't develop friendships, because you're too worried about being rejected by people. And then, since you haven't got any friendships, you feel rejected by people. So to replace that lie, I've been risking reaching out to friends, telling myself there's plenty of people in the world who want to be my friend, and if that one person doesn't turn out to be someone who wants to be my friend, that's on them, not on me. The last situation in which we lie to ourselves is our memories. The most dangerous bias we have is our memory of the past. We think our memory of the past is reality, but our brains are not video recorders. They take photos, not videos. We fill in the spaces between the photographs to make up the stories of our past. We concoct what we think happened. And when we're believing the stories of our past, we're believing a figment of our imagination. Elizabeth Loftus said, "It's a little more like a Wikipedia page. You can go in there and change it, and so can other people." Think about how your memories can get biased by something that someone else said. So when I'm aware that I'm rehashing the past, I ask myself the question that my teacher Thich Nhat Hanh suggests, and that is, are you sure? And of course, my automatic answer is yes, I'm sure, because I'm always right. And then I ask it again and again to see, am I really sure? Is it really right? So those are some of the situations we lie to ourselves in. We lie to ourselves by saying the sky is falling, by having black and white thinking, it's either all true or all false, by having a negative narrative that we never think of anything positive about ourselves, only the negative, or we mind read. We say, oh, that person looked at me funny, they don't like me. We use emotional reasoning. I felt like this in the past and something bad happened, so I'm feeling like that now, something bad's gonna happen. Or we have should statements that other people are expecting from us. The key is to realize that just because you have a thought doesn't mean you have to believe it, much less act on it. Practicing mindfulness allows us to become aware that the thoughts that pop up in our head, we can see many of the thoughts are just figments of our imagination. They're stories we made up. So we can ask ourselves, is this image or soundbite reality? You'll find that some of the thoughts you believe to be true were, in fact, lies.